I think it's just a state of being content and like being okay with each other every day, and no matter where you are, what situation you're in, and being comfortable in like all kinds of situations, and like not having to feel that you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing, or like walking, you were just talking about. I mean, it's a very simple activity. It's something one does. But I don't know. It is kind of strange that it's not what people do over here. To like go places. Especially for women. Because then you're judged, like, on the street, or people stare, and you don't feel comfortable, I guess. And it's not about what you're wearing, also, it's just the idea of, like, a woman walking down the street, even if she's with a group of people, also.
I think on a very individual level, it's about choosing sides, whether you want to be peaceful or you don't want to be peaceful. Because it's all about survival. If you become peaceful in the circumstances that we're in, then you just get, I think you just get taken for granted. And people just misuse you and abuse you. And that's why people choose to be not peaceful, so that they can deal with the situations that they've been imposed on. So, yeah, it's about choosing. If you, and to get that peace, it's just not about being peaceful, it's getting peace of mind. And mentally, I don't think things have been, it's all in a vicious circle, it's happening. So you can't get mental peace unless there's not peace everywhere. And everywhere there cannot be peace if you're not mental peace.
I think that understanding of people or each other is peace. Like, how to understand the other people, or how to feel. So maybe now we're able to make us peace if we understand other people.
Well, I guess the fear is the peace. If you don't fear, then it means there's no peace. It's on the contrary. Like, let me investigate the word peace. Where is not peace? Is one. As being a human and as a perceptual examiner, we always allow or we always obey over the mental statements and what we are thinking right now. I'm drinking an expensive wine and my legs on a beautiful girl, but I have a gun on my head. So what do you think? I would be in a peace? No. So peace is me, it's near to me. The legitimacy of your ideological space. Where you possess, where you legitimate your thoughts. That is the state of peace near to me. Otherwise, or you can say this is in Urdu, gundagardi. Where do you, hack anything, violence. The superior stage of the violence is called peace, I guess. Because the poverty, the lowest level of contemplation can't be a peace. You can see a priest, a Maulvi, or a Pandit. Do you think he's in peace? Who's obeyed day and night, and idols. And more you speak, who's preaching in a mosque, who would win a peace? I never say.
I would say peace is a very personalized word.
Exactly.
And every person varies, like peace, this word varies from person to person. And the definition of peace has been changed with time. So peace does exist, but it's very personalized. It's to your inner self. Like in a world like nowadays, if we see the corruption, the terrorists that are around us, but I do find peace. It's up to us whether we change our mind. It's not like if our environment is full of all the social evils, we are not at peace. So if someone is like, it would be a very disturbing example, but if someone is very obsessed with something, whether it's negative or positive, will he find peace in that? If, for example, if you call a murderer a murderer, he murders, so he finds peace in that. So it's, I think it's the obsession that leads to your peace. It's very, very personalized. I would find, I find peace everywhere. It's just me. I should decide peace where I find peace.
Yeah.
Meditation, prayer, watching movies, listening to music. Hard, like, there's some sort of a music that you're not pleasant with. Like hard rock, really hard rock. So some people find peace in that. Some people are free in music. So there are certain terms and terminologies that peace does exist, but in a metaphorical way.
Yeah. I agree with that.
And do you ever share those very personal definitions or experiences with others? Or do you think it's precisely something that you don't share? It's not a common...
No, I'm sharing it. I think it's the first time I'm sharing that peace is a personalized word. But
no,
I do
don't think so.
Peace.
It's personalized because we live in people and world. So, attraction to each other.
So you are not
other.
Peaceful ever?
Yeah, but it's up to you that way you find peace. You have to go there.
You can't relate your own peace with others.
If you understand each other, then you can
figure
out peace.
I can find peace with my own self. I don't need anybody for that.
But in a way, it's a sad thing.
That's my peace.
No, but it's a sad thing because one would want to live in a society where people could share the same idea of peace. And in a way, I think many of the things that you might say are peaceful for you could almost be offensive to other people. You know, so in a way, then you say, well, peace is an inward activity. It's not something that you share in a public space. It's not something that everyone participates in.
But if you're, like, for example, if you're in a society, or if you're on a very quiet nature around you and you're experiencing just nature, so what's peace to you? So I think it's my own personal experience. I'm not forcing it on someone
else. It is actually, I think, like, you know, as you said, if you are walking in your country and you feel comfortable. See, it's also like, I think, like, if I'm comfortable and I can, then I can, you know, talk to you in a very easy manner. It is actually, you know, if you are in peace, then you can, you know, talk with the people, then they feel comfortable.
Yeah, without peace, no one...
Imposing the word peace, it makes you realize that there is no peace.
Yeah, that's why I said it's...
I mean, I don't know how anyone else
feels.
So
how can you say
but
there
when
is
I
no
think
peace?
Of peace, I think of all the places in my life where there is no peace. I think of like driving my car with somebody flashing their lights and blowing the horn and trying to overtake me no matter how impossible that might be.
Peace actually a one kind of discipline where you are actually sitting with the silence and you are actually trying to talk with some other person. It's also like, you know, silence is a very good thing for the peace. Sometimes. I understand what you are talking. That's when you are going in a society and you have to discuss with the peoples and spontaneously that's the major factor. Then you realize actually how much you are in peace when you are in front of some person.
If you just keep saying peace,
emphasizing
the word peace all the time, then I guess it just shows that there is absence of peace there. So that's my point.
That's what David said, that when you say peace, you're actually thinking of what's not peaceful. And,
yeah, I do that. Does anyone else do that?
Yeah.
I mean, just the word peace brings up negative thoughts in our head. Whereas it's supposed to bring up positive thoughts. It's being a non-peaceful way.
It's just about finding the alternative. Like, every beginning has an end, so every negative thing has a positive thing. It's up to you for you to decide whether which line are you. Do you want to go or you choose?
In your lives as students, is there peace? In your interactions with the school? Or
no.
Mm-hmm.
In a nutshell, yes.
No.
It seemed to be different points of view.
I don't think so. Not at all.
And how so or how not?
It's just how things, like, the administration, how things are done, things that are lacking. Everything tends to like get to you after a while. And you're faced with these like problems every day. And it's not very peaceful.
And I think like a lot of other things in life, peace is another thing which doesn't kind of directly deal with present. It's going to do a lot with what happened or what you anticipate. So for me, peace would be the anticipation of peace, not peace being right now.
I think it has different meanings when we talk about inner self. Then the peace has different meaning, but if we're talking about the society, then
it has just one
different. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about a society, then for me, the peace is circumstances where you live without the fear of threat of violence. Where you live without the threat of violence. The threat is not only restricted with the time of war, the violence could be in your home, your school, even in your community.
I will continue whatever he's saying, that if you talk it privately, just this word peace, you would depend on the other person to be peaceful. But if it's very personalized, you will not depend on anything, it's just you. So where is peace then?
You are not the only one in the living world.
That's
it's about injustice. It's about injustice.
For example, the environment is not about you, okay? Something is happening you are not immune to that. And you say that's not peaceful. So that's not peaceful, okay? So if you're thinking at your home, you're totally your unconscious mind and it's mind space, okay? You're totally blank, okay? And everything is happening according to you in your mind. And you have no negative thoughts about that. That's
peace. You don't
have anything.
For peace.
I wanted to say, two, three persons
agreed
with me, so I don't find anyone.
I
would define peace, and I think I have defined peace for quite some time, as equality. And I think if you define peace as equality, you can't think of it as a personal thing, because of this concept of injustice or justice, whichever way you choose to think of it. But how can we as people live our lives on whatever level of comfort when we know that others perhaps are not, whether it be because of lack of rights, lack of resources? And I believe that if you look at the concept of peace as perpetuating equality, that's something that you can make work on a private level with just your family and the people that you work with or who work for you, as well as a way to approach anything that you do in life. And if you strive towards equality, not just in your own life, but like I said, in the world around you, that perhaps can be the journey to one day achieving a more holistic peace. But I think when you look at peace as a purely internal thing, like you were mentioning, it's problematic to me, because I can sit in my house because I have the privilege of having parents who are there, people who work for me, and you know, I have an amount of financial independence which allows me to live a very peaceful life. And if something were to happen in Pakistan, which would make things slightly, or which would make it more difficult for me to live here, I could leave. So I can have peace for myself, you know, for as long as I see it. But if I defined peace in that way, then it would never extend beyond anyone but myself. And that, for me, doesn't give me peace.
Maybe it's generational too. You know, when I lived in Karachi, the older generation was always talking about how wonderful it was in the 70s and how it would return to that one day. And clearly it wouldn't. And maybe younger generation is looking more inwardly at that the only peace you can find is within yourself, because you don't feel empowered to make a difference in society or sort out problems which are just too many and too impossible to engage with. But it also seems to have perhaps a religious connotation too, about a spirituality in terms of a solace and peace there.
When you talk about peace within yourself, I mean, isn't there supposed to be like a level of contentment? It's not about being, like you said, most of us come from financially secure, so we have the option of moving to more peaceful places, if not Pakistan, but even just the intimate level of peace, if like the within yourself definition, and if you're just contented with things around you, or just, you know, at a very small level, even that gives you peace.
There are levels of peace we're talking about here. One is the political peace and one is the personal peace.
I mean, so even a poor person can feel really at peace with his circumstances if he's contented with what he has.
And he might feel more at peace since he doesn't know politically directly what unpeaceful a place he's at right now. See?
At this moment, when it seems there's a lack of faith here in the political, in the government, I understand why you would define peace differently, not necessarily in those terms, in terms of the state and politics proper. But when Kant speaks of hospitality, he doesn't just say that you're hospitable to someone who wants to come into your country. He says you're hospitable to them when they want to come into your home. So like the home is also political, and the things that you do in private and in a personal space also have politics associated with them. So is it so easy to make to kind of divide the political from the personal? Isn't the personal political also? Like, aren't you, despite not feeling like the state represents you, aren't you nevertheless being very politically active and responsible when you construct a peace more personally?
Well, on a broader level, yes, but I think it's easy and convenient to kind of draw that line and stay... define peace when we're talking about the personal peace. It's more of a convenient peace, I think, because then you can just not look at what's happening outside yourself and outside your home, and you can
live within
that. But when we talk about political peace, I think that in that domain, both of them are involved, because unless you're at peace with yourself, it will be difficult to find it for the others. That's what I think.
Yeah, I just had 2 points that... I think, continuing from that point, that there's no political feeling, the homely feeling in our own country. We don't feel that because we don't associate ourselves with the country in a manner that we don't feel peaceful. We don't feel peaceful, or we don't see peace coming because we don't see peace staying. I think even if there is peace, like, older generation thing, that they used to say that there was peace, and now there's no peace. So even if there is peace again, it's not going to stay, because there's no consistency. Yeah. I can't say the word.
Okay.
You get it. In this peace world, or this peace situation, it cannot stay forever. And similarly, I think a war cannot stay forever, because there is a beginning and an end to everything. So there will be peace at a time, but it won't stay. So this frame of mind that it is going to happen or not, people are not sure. So that's why they just prefer they're just going with the flow, how things are going, because they know that there will be a point that it will come back to the situation. And then if it stays, it'll stay for a while and then it'll go away. So there are no problems.
So it's cyclical.
But it's cyclical, but I think another thing which is directly related to is perpetual peace versus the perpetual unrest. Because even if you anticipate that peace will come one day, I think at the same time there's another thing going on at the same time that might never come. So the perpetual unrest might be there always.
Yeah.
Because you look at history,
conflict.
So there's always something going on. The anticipation of the perpetual peace has always been there, versus that perpetual unrest in the world politically, which is always been there as well.
But living in a state that's sort of defined by terrorism, the whole idea of terrorism being that you're perpetually anticipating something awful happening, even if it doesn't happen all the time, there's the possibility that whatever you're doing in your everyday life, there may be a bomb, there may be a shooting.
Yeah.
And so that's an that's an absolute absence of the possibility of peace.
Mm-hmm.
Just the possibility that this can happen in your everyday life.
And that anticipation is what creates the fear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's got a lot to do with the media. Like when we, again, if you go back to the dividing the inner peace and the political peace, so if you just cut off from the media, so then... Personally, I don't think any one of us has ever experienced the political unrest that's been happening outside Lahore,
mm-hmm.
or even within Lahore.
Because I tried
to. I live in
Ari
Bazaar.
Yeah.
I live around the corner from where 60 people were killed.
Yeah. Did you get affected physically, or it's just...
The windows almost jumped out of my eyes.
Yeah.
My servant resigned and took his family and said he's going back to his village.
Like, I experienced the moratorium blast. All our house windows got, you know... And for so many months, like, it just keeps on reverberating in your brain, like, just that sound. And
but you see, if you were not so affected by the news that you were hearing and all the information that you have, then probably a house next door might have been burned by fire.
Yeah.
And that probably would not have created
this. I tried
that
because I was getting, I think I was losing it. I was feeling very unhappy living here, and I tried to stop watching the news for 2 weeks, and it made a difference.
Yeah.
It did make
That's
a difference.
That's really interesting. When I came back last year from being in Europe,
just,
I was just watching the news, you know,
perpetually,
because you were just trying to get hold of what was going on. And when anything is reported, it's, a few people killed, and then it just... grows and grows and through the day until it turns into, you know.
But then when you do block it out, you feel very selfish.
Mm-hmm.
I just
want
to
question
one thing.
There's
no peace inside.
There's still no peace inside. You feel very selfish. Okay, fine, you're not watching the news when people are being killed and whatever. But you've kind of temporarily blocked that disharmony or that disturbing factor. But it's still there in the fringe somewhere.
I just want to question one thing. We always say we can't find peace. Why can't we create peace? We can't find peace. We can't find peace. I don't find peace. Why can't we create it?
How would you create it? I mean,
well,
what ideas would you have about
doing
creating?
There is a possibility. There is a
the word peace is made, I guess, in 19th or 20th century. Every decade brings new legitimacy of ideas. Your legitimacy is human right and everything. So we're following this, you know, the 200 years bad definition of the same word. We always follow, as a political statement, if we look back at 50 years, we had a peace at the same time. The genocide was being happened against, you know, Hindus, and then 1850s, then the British, before the Turks. So we're, especially the subcontinental people, we shouldn't talk about the peace, or we wouldn't be, you know, as much confident about the peace. We have to legitimate the transform the meanings according to our circumstances. Look, who says there is no peace? Are we saying? Or are we be treating to say, to not say, to say this not peace? But especially in Buddhist religion, Buddha always claimed that the love means to suffer in the world. You have to be in peace. It's mean the peace is the code of ethic which you have to apply in your life, in your or in your thoughts. Same like this, the word beauty. You can find beauty, but just few days back, I read a word. With lovely sight, you can find beauty everywhere. So, if you, whatever following any idea or your excellence, then I guess according to that you have to transform the peace into your circumstances. Otherwise, those will still and will continue. You know, find out and, you know, fighting to each other about, because where is the true birth and there is a contradiction zone. So how can this draw closer to don't sin against you? So the level of bearance or the tolerance, I guess these are these.
It's just like making the whole new person, every person, if you want this. And they should be the same. Then where's the mutual person?
Brutality changed the meaning in the Roman era. The brutality doesn't mean differently like now.
Like you said, if there's no sadness, you won't know the meaning of happiness.
Yeah, that's in order to find each and every word, in order to find peace, you need to experience each and every level of life. So it's not that if there would have been just peace, then I don't know.
I think we've experienced enough war now.
Yeah.
It's time for peace.
The problem is the history, the influence of the history. It provoke you or affect you to find out the new way.
There are all this like, comparison between two things, peace, war, love, hate, negative, positive.
Nothing
justice and justice.
We are developing. With development, our minds should develop. But we've been confined.
Emotion always been developed. This is emotional perception.
Emotions are being squished. Minds, I don't know.
What do you associate the future with? When I talked to Gulzar, the architecture dean, I've only been here a few days, but he was the first person I met that had what I would think of as like an optimistic perspective for the future. And what do you associate the future with?
I think it's going to rise from the ashes. It has to burn down and then the phoenix will rise. Hopefully that's what I am looking forward to, at least since everything has been going wrong lately, you see. So how worse can it get before it starts getting better?
It's going to get a lot worse.
But then there has to be a turning point at some point.
I mean, this past month was really bad.
The earthquake, the cricket, everything, every aspect, So like I have a little example, like me and my husband, like for the last 2-3 years, we've been planning to apply for an immigration to some other country because the things are so much not at peace, and then, you know, you think about the kids and, you know, you don't want to raise them. And we always think about it whenever there's a blast or whenever something is hit, and then we get scared. And then 2 days after that, we kind of stop thinking about it, or we kind of get used to it, and then we say, we want to live in Lahore, so we hope it's not going to happen again. And that's another cycle that keeps happening every 2 months or every 3 months. And we're still in that same limbo. We don't know if we want to leave and go to some other place and start a new life altogether, or we want to get used to it and hope that things will
happen. It's like defining your threshold. I mean, what is your threshold before you would say that's enough?
But the threshold also increases, you see. The more you take pain, it keeps increasing, so you never know.
The actual feeling that you want to go but you're not going, this reason, because you have this hope that things will get better every day. You don't want that to happen. Basically the hope is there that you want things to get better. There is the optimism there, but then
the anticipation of fear makes you think it might be
the changing landscape, the way all the walls are coming up and more, and suddenly you know a city where you could see greenery. And
but if you go to Islamabad, Islamabad is just being transformed. There's like sandbags everywhere, and each alley is blocked with barbed wire.
But my point
so
is
many guns on the street everywhere all the time. Barricades.
But you know, it's happening like slowly and gradually. It's not happening over a day or two. And then since it's a gradual progression, you kind of get used to it, and then that's what you relate to till the point that even that gets worse, and then from there, So
I wonder though why we talk about the future, and you know, I hope that things are going to get better, and like, you know, you're optimistic and you pray for something, but why not do something about it? Why not? And I'm not saying that you should go and, you know, run for office or get, you don't even necessarily have to get involved politically. But what can you do about it, even in your own home, to make things better? And I think if you don't think that will make a difference, that's, I don't agree with that. I think it can. And I think when you have small successes, that gives you it can encourage you to then have bigger successes and move outside of your home. So if you can have a successful home, or at least build the start of a successful home, and I don't necessarily mean with your own family, but you know, with the people that you work with your gardener, with your driver, with your cook, whoever, are there children in school? Do their children have the chance to maybe have a different future? If you can influence that in any way, then you're changing the future of not just yourself, but the people around you. And I think that's what change is. I don't think change is running for office necessarily, or being part of even an NGO or whatever. But I think you can do it in a private space and create a change that then is, you know, sort of, it can be reciprocated, so there's a back and forth, but it can also bounce and go in on several different levels, and it can, and that is, you know, then it can permeate different levels, and that's where change happens. And I think if we're aware of that and if we embrace that, I think it would be a lot more fulfilling than hoping that things happen. I think creating change is a lot more fulfilling, and I think inevitably would give you more of a sense of peace.
I agree with that, but I think the problem there is that as a nation, at least as Punjabis, we are very laid-back people. We always expect that somebody else will come and do it for us because we are so busy with our own lives. And even if the children of my servants at home, they go to school, but I don't know what kind of education they're going to get. Are they going to have this kind of awareness or not? I don't know what is taught at the government schools.
No, but
so to get to that grassroots level kind of place, I'll have to go to probably those schools and make a change in the education system over there.
Or teach the kids at home. That's what we've started doing. We've taken, we have a woman that comes and cleans our house, and her son had been, he kept getting dropped back in his classes, and the school eventually said, we're not going to teach him anymore. So we brought him in, and he probably was dyslexic or had some kind of learning disability that hadn't been diagnosed. And we brought him in, and we got him up to whatever class level, and then we sent him back into that school. Now, obviously, we're not sure what's going to happen after that. But you can do it, and it doesn't take a lot. You don't have to have any particular qualification, but you can do that. You can make a difference.
Yeah, you know, in Pakistan, like our state of not being in peace is really linked to the haves and the have-nots.
Mm.
Some people have everything, and a lot of people have nothing. So if we can just make that change, so I agree with that. Like, if in our immediate circles we start making change and they start feeling we're not the have-nots anymore, in some way, so maybe then they don't feel so disenfranchised if they get an education, you know, something like that.
But still, practically, if you look at it, then again, this is that kind of a thing that will give you inner peace.
Yeah.
But to have its effect on a political level, it's going to take
years.
But still, I think there's another way of planning this thing. There are different ideas of creating peace there as well. Because there's an idea that says solve the problem or kill the problem. The two ways of looking at the same thing. Some people who go on blasting, they are trying to put in an idea in people's head that we want something. Maybe they want peace in a very different manner. They're using different means to create peace. And then there are some people who are, you know, just having rallies or boycotting stuff or having strikes. That's another way of creating peace. They're just different.
No, even people who are exploding, they're calling our attention to something.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to understand why a 17-year-old or why even kids younger than that are just suicide bombers. What have they not gotten, which is leading them to that? So that's the...
But you don't tend to hear their voice, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
so
it's just completely not there.
Yeah, they're just the bad...
They're just the dummies.
Yeah. So if we can address why they're doing it, maybe that's the beginning of peace.
Well, I think that's the problem. See, once you start exploring things, that always one thing leads to another. Even if you want to find out what that 17-year-old is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So to find out that, you'll have to probably go to the person who taught him that, to think that
mm-hmm.
way. And then it keeps going back and back. And then at the end, I don't know where it will lead to. And who have that those kind of resources to actually go to that level and find out the truth.
Mm-hmm. It's just like doing that skeletons.
Sorry?
Digging up skeletons. That's just taking it back into the past to improve your future.
But again, that needs a lot of energy.
Yeah,
and
but you need to identify what's going wrong. Is it your education?
that's part of it.
Education, I think, is the biggest thing, which is, I mean, the madrasa education, we don't know what they're teaching there.
I'll tell you what they're teaching. I spent a couple of weeks in madrasas in Karachi, on the periphery of Karachi. And most of the people come from homes where, the children come from homes where sometimes they don't have enough food, they don't have clothing, a change of clothing. Their parents, they'll probably have the same lives as their parents if they continue on doing sort of menial work. And when they go to the madrasa, they're given food, they're given clothing, they're given shelter, and they're given a purpose in life. And I'm not saying that all madrasas teach people to, you know, obviously, but for them, that's their peace then, I guess.
And that's the professional peace that they look forward to.
Yeah, that's peaceful for them.
The heaven and the paradise.
Exactly.
And that's the peace that they look for, and I think because they're not given an alternative. And, you know, when we're talking about the people that work for us and or the people that we interact with on a day-to-day basis, think about the way that you talk to them. Even the way that you interact with them is so different than the way that we interact with each other. And that creates a disparity. And in the way that we understand the world, they are constantly suppressed to a point where they see our lives. And for them, that is, you know, perhaps the greatest peace they can imagine. And I think that's difficult when you show someone something that you've achieved and then you tell them that they can't have it or they can't come near it and that you don't even talk to them in the same way that you talk to each other. And I think we're all lucky enough that we aren't condescended to in that way.
So just by the end of the day, it all comes down to, like, finances then? Is it the reason...
I don't think affluence guarantees peace, but I do think...
You know, before, like, all these people who want to blow up themselves, it starts from the same reason, that they don't have enough money.
Yeah, have not.
Well, they don't have any belief in this life.
Yeah, that's the utility of this life. Because they're having nothing here, so they're like, you know,
just maybe better.
They think they'll be better somewhere else, a future life.
I think it could be a lack of purpose as well, because, like, at these madrasas that I went to, there were people from America, Pakistanis from America, from Malaysia, from England. And these were people who not necessarily came from incredibly affluent places, affluent families or affluent places, but they could afford to send them to a madrasa in Pakistan. And so they were financially stable, but I think that they felt that particular route in life would give them more purpose than anything else. Mm-hmm. But in my personal belief is that when you put yourself into such a small community, whether it's Wahhabism or Deobandi or whatever it is, and you isolate others and you define peace by a community which excludes others, that's problematic. And I think we all do that on a certain level.
But in many ways, perhaps we find our peace in community. I mean, that's part of being peaceful, isn't it? Part of a sense of belonging. And maybe the tighter and the more... separate that community, maybe, well, you know, it's more that much more fulfilling, having that identity, wearing that uniform, thinking, sharing those beliefs.
When I was at LUMS and when I was elsewhere, I kept hearing a certain sense that there was no state here. There's a state in name, but not in actuality. That it's a weak state. And that if one has a sense of belonging, it's not to Pakistan, but rather to something more local or regional or tribal or something that's precisely not national. And I don't know if anybody wants to speak to this. There's this discussion about India. And do any of you see the state as able to construct a more peaceful relationship with India? Do you have any faith in the state to usher forth a more peaceful...
Not with India, because I think since Pakistan has been an army-led nation for quite a while, so it is in their it's in their favor if the two nations are at war. Both the armies at both the ends, they keep benefiting. So again, it comes down to the finances they earn. I think that's the livelihood that the army gets to earn from that side. So perhaps they won't.
I'm hopeful. I think if we give democracy a chance in Pakistan for some years now, no matter how bad it is, they'll eventually realize that we need to trade and we need to have cultural exchange, and maybe South Asia, we can just like the EU is where they're like trading and they have a common some common goals. Maybe in this region we can do, and we'll have to if we have to survive.
But till the army has such a strong hold,
they're
not going to let that
happen. But then, does everyone perceive India as a benign state in relation to Pakistan?
Again, I think when it comes out to government, their government suffers from the same things that our government suffers from. But when you meet the people in India, they're just like us, they want the same things.
Yeah.
I haven't met a single Indian so far who doesn't want peace and the Kashmir thing to be resolved and have free borders where they can come here and you can go there. So it comes down to person level, I think it's all the same.
But I think India, to an extent, always feels that Pakistan is carved out of India. You know, and even at a religious level, there's a belief in the, you know, there's a relationship to the rivers and the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And how does one undo that?
Do you feel that there's a state here apart from the military?
Like a dummy state.
Yeah, they're living in denial.
A puppet state.
Yeah, a puppet state.
Perhaps.
If you have everything you want, you think, then you feel peace. Otherwise, not.
The fear of death.
What?
The fear of death.
When you have everything you want, you think, then you feel.
But you know,
if you have everything you want, then you want more stuff.
No, but also, I think if you have everything you want, you're also afraid of losing it.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of your time being paranoid about, oh my god, the financial crisis has just reduced my wealth by half.
Nobody is perfect.
But I think, like, you know, the unrest, it comes from the idea when you want something, and by wanting something, it's kind of divided into two things. One is to acquire more, and one is to safeguard what you already have.
Mm-hmm.
And when any one of these things at threat, so that kind of leads to a conflict, and then that conflict leads you to some at the position where you're not at peace.
Mm-hmm.
That's another kind of state where you're away from peace, personal or probably on a bigger level, it can be politically done the same way.
Yeah, sometimes when I think of Pakistan's, you know, being created as a separate nation for Muslims, and if you kind of statistically take into account the number of Muslims in India right now, and you add the number of Muslims in Bangladesh, and you add the number of Muslims in Pakistan, and if we had not been divided, we would have been more Muslims, actually. And you never know, maybe we could have been more at peace. And then, of course, there's lots of people who are going to debate that we would have been completely marginalized by Hindus. But then that's questions.
I don't know about Islam when you talk about it recently, but you have been studying this in the history of Islam ever since the first caliphate has been quite violent.
Yeah.
Now, again, over there, like, what the religion preaches is something else, but ever since the politics starts coming in, and then that desire to acquire more, whether it's more land or to expand the religion or whatever.
So I'm just saying, did we need independence in the first place?
Yeah, that's a very major question.
Yeah.
Is that treasonable?
Well, not in this room, I hope.
It cannot be undone.
I think we should have some set rules for the word peace. So if we talk about the personal peace, personal peaceful act, sometimes peaceful for the one person and not peaceful for the other person. For example, the suicide bomber is also doing a peaceful act because he want to
he wants
paradise. Okay, so he is killing people. He's not peaceful for us, but
he's peaceful for his own peace.
Or, for example, I want HD camera for David. It is peaceful for me, but not for David.
Sorry,
so I think personal. If we talk about personal peace, then it's endless.
Yeah.
We can't reach one point. So
who
would have to be responsible on a certain level. Yeah.
As a community or as a society, we should have some strict rules that this is a peaceful act or this is not a peaceful act.
Well, that's an interesting idea, because I think in societies where you really want to protect the rights of every individual in that society, you actually become very constrained in what in your actions because of protecting the rights of other people and not offending them and not transgressing them. So that becomes an interesting kind of conundrum.
You have to enforce it. You have to, you know, oddly enough, to establish peace, one has to resort to force.
Democracy and peace. Yeah. People in Pakistan think of democracy in terms, they think of it as freedom, but they don't think of it, rather than thinking of it as responsibility. You know, I think in a democratic society, everybody feels empowered and responsible to some extent for the society they live in. And yet many people, most of the people in this country, I think of democracy as giving them more freedom, but not taking on more responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Maybe perhaps it's got something to do with the way we are raised, that somebody else always is there to do the things for us as kids. And then when you grow up, not even in the physical form, on some other intellectual level, we expect that somebody else will come and fix the things for us or spoon feed us. Anybody got something to say about that?
Sorry, you do.
Like, you know, when you raise the kids, okay, they're always a servant or there's always a nanny or a daddy to feed them, to dress them up. When they make mess, there's always somebody to clear up the mess they make after them. So when we grow up, I think we carry the same attitude.
But not all of the families and all of the children are raised like that.
Most of us, I'm talking about the group at least that's sitting here.
Mm. Whereas in the West, babies have to change their own nappies.
I'm talking even to the teenage, you see.
No, but I mean, there is some core thing there that I completely agree with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We expect somebody else to come and
do things
for us. Clear our mess.
Yeah.
Even on a national.
But that person who comes and clears your mess probably also tells you what you are supposed to think and is going to enforce that to some extent. Or that voice, the big other, is always going to be there. It's the big other, perhaps, that tells you that you're transgressing when you walk down the street. Or
especially when we're not hiring that big other to come and do it for us, and we just let them to come and do it for us. We will take advantage.
Can you help me understand some of the other things that you feel that you've lost or that you don't have? For instance, we're talking about going for a walk being something that would be something to aspire towards, but something you don't often as women feel comfortable doing. What are some of the other things that, I don't know, whether you think of the United States or you just think of the society that you're part of and how you'd like to be, things that aren't the way you want?
Cycling.
Bicycling,
something we used to do as kids,
but
we love to do. They would never expect females on a bicycle.
Yeah.
And then just not having females on a
Women are on
a
motorbike.
Females can drive a bike, but here is it impossible?
It's impossible. I mean, just the fact that a woman cannot sit with her legs apart on a scooter, she has to sit so uncomfortably on the side. Mount that bicycle. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Even jogging, even if you go in a park and you want to jog. So everybody's going to stare at you like as if you're doing something really ordinary. By you walking there, everybody's fine. It's normal.
Yeah. Just to the cycling comment though, I agree with you that it is a problem, but there is a group of people who do cycle every Sunday.
Yeah,
no,
there was a group. It's all right. You feel safe in a community.
There are
a lot of people who are going. But if you want to do
I'm saying there are people who do things to address those issues.
Yeah.
And so you can go cycling, and I have been, and you get stopped by the police, and they're like, what are you doing? But you can do that. And it's a small thing, and it is a small group, but you can sort of address those issues.
I think this cycling, just on Sunday or within a specific area, just in a Kent, and it's a very peaceful area.
Yeah.
He can't cycling in the jail road or Bhati Gate is impossible.
Just walking is impossible on Bhati Gate or you're
you have to bring your cycles in a car.
People do this. People do this.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Even driving is a bit problematic.
Yeah.
So do you feel like there's a public sphere? Like when I was speaking about the work I do, it, so much of it takes back or tries to take advantage of a public space. Do you feel like you have any public space or a public space you have a right to?
Yeah, of course we do. I just want to make one more comment. I don't know, even when you're talking about the cycling and the jogging bit, I just want to kind of contradict my own self that I don't know what the other person is going to do. I don't think anybody's ever going to come up to me and say, why are you doing that? Or don't do this. But it's my own...
But they do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Homer's had people coming up to her and Liberty and saying, she'd be interacting in a shop and the guy will say, you don't mind me saying this, but you seem like a nice person. Why didn't you dress properly?
Properly.
Yeah. You know, or whatever. Or people, even at Liberty, people have gone around screaming at people. I mean, so it actually only takes very small gestures to be...
Make
them
uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think so.
Even a stare.
A stare, yeah, that's the most uncomfortable thing.
I mean, people don't have to say anything, but just that staring.
A staircase. But I don't think there is a public space. I think there is no public space because I think actually when you think of your public spaces, they're actually private spaces.
Yeah.
If you think of the park you jog in, it's actually really something that's very known. It's not a kind of, it's not Bharti Gate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't go there to jog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to the safe places and you interact in the ways where you feel you can deal with what is on offer to you or you're encountering.
But so if you want to go Ravi on the cycle, then you have to go through the Bharti Gate.
Well, I've been to Gulshan Ravi on a bicycle. I have with Ravi. The police came out and said, put your mobile phones away. This is a dangerous area. What are you doing here on a bike? You're going to get robbed. And,
I don't know why. I think it's not just about what makes us uncomfortable or what we want to do, it's also what is being offered. Like, there's so many times when I want to take my kids out to a park or to play, so there are hardly any parks around in Berlin, at least.
Yeah,
there's no place where they have proper swings or.
Yeah,
but you're right, but I mean, this is such. I lived in Karachi for most of my life here. And. Which is actually the greater part of my life, pretty much now. I've lived spent in Pakistan. And there's absolutely no public spaces like that. Even if there is a park, it's worn down flat, pretty much. And actually, Lahore is
it's
a city of gardens.
Yeah.
But we look at New Lahore, there's no kind of planning for the implementation of contemporary park spaces. They're all park spaces that have been inherited, very, very few newly created spaces. But why does all this happen? It also happens because nobody feels it's their job to actually... You know, raising a voice is one thing, but maybe it has to be something much more active.
I think there should be some specific sort of one day, like at least in a month, one peace day. I think that would make a difference.
Nice idea. What would you do on a peace day?
I would dress up white.
Okay.
Like for example, in Doha,
that's very John Lennon, which is great. I like it.
Anything white, death
is
death
is also.
The things that women are not, women or men are not allowed to do on any normal day, like for example, bike, jogging. We could do it randomly on streets. We could just show our aggression in a very soft tone that. Hello, we want to do this, and I think that
we won't change their minds.
But I think something like this cannot happen in a country like Pakistan where there are such distinct classes.
You know,
some
country
people have
like
everything
Pakistan
and there are people that don't have
coach, okay. Like everything has happened before.
But there are a lot of people who are deprived of
the
basic necessities of life. So something like this will not help at a larger level in a country like Pakistan. Like you're talking about parks and everything, so all of these places, I think anybody sitting over here would not like to go to a park for recreation or anything. So there are classes, there are people who are only open to such places for
that's true.
Recreation.
Yeah, like on any Eid or any 45 minutes occasion, the parks are filled up with people from the world.
But nobody from us would like to go to a park on Eid or anything.
So people would rather.
I do.
I would.
I do.
No, but once in a while maybe,
yeah.
But these places are
for, sure.
For them.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really like going to such places.
But you know what, I mean, even if you
were
to look at, you know, any big city in the world, the really rich people have got big gardens.
Yeah.
And, you know, an awful lot of other people have to really enjoy public spaces or whatever kind. It's not so different in some ways.
So what else could happen on this peace day?
We
could give all the maids and all the servants a day off and do our works on our own.
Yeah.
Let them
probably
go to their houses and do this for them for some one day.
Three
drinks.
Three drinks.
And the borders should open and they should
you know, the prices should get low on that specific day.
Yeah.
Prices and
there should be no
restrictions. No, not no restrictions. In France, there was a match, there was this one match, football match. I think some of the teams won, and there was this one rule, I don't know, I forgot about the person, he gave no restrictions on that day. The whole city ended up in a terror kind of mood. The men were raping women on the road, and the police was just walking by, not doing anything, so not
in their sense.
There should be set restrictions, but in order to give a positive impact on our country, we should take an initiative. And to that, I will want to mention that when you are not peace from inside, how can you take a step which is peaceful? So you need to first give an opportunity to your own self and then make a difference.
If I could on that peace day, I would like no news, no new channels. No
yeah,
news
I don't
TV.
Watch news, seriously. I never
I
watch news.
That would be a peaceful
no
day.
Maybe Pakistan needs a kind of youth movement, you know, akin to something that happened, say, with you know, in America
yeah.
or Europe with the Vietnam War. You know, in terms of just saying it has to change and this doesn't represent us and this is not what we want.
But our youth is, you know, we are getting more influenced by West rather than seeing their positive things. We are more into what our forgetting what our culture is, and we are influenced with that.
You know,
and we are forgetting what our roots are, basically. From
even in the universities, there should be just one specific day on which you can have peace workshops. Like right now, that we are having, we are all peaceful right now. We are discussing peace. So this thing should happen once a week, or you know, when it starts like that, then it ends up in a good result. Then. On a very personal level, you even start exercising that peace within yourself. So even the personal level comes from inside, and even the outside comes from inside. So that's like balancing out the whole thing.
When people speak about erosion of cultural values and the influx of ideas from the West, for instance, what are the specifics? What are the things which are being lost, and what are they being replaced with?
I think like the way Misha explained that, you know, a majority from us, we will not go to the parks. And majority from us will rather go on a Saturday party rather than going to a park for a walk. And we have these things in our minds. We are being so influenced from the West and thinking about that those things are more, you know, more into ourselves, taking them in our mind and adopting them rather than taking positive things from them, and then we start blaming everything to them as well. That's something we are not peaceful about. We should stop blaming each other for these and creating peace.
So in a way you're saying part of being peaceful is knowing who you are.
Yeah.
I want to say something about the peace day. How can we make society peaceful by celebrating a peace day, not by not watching news.
LCA students, they started to paint walls, as you people have seen graffiti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That gives a very harmonious gesture to our country.
How about if the media makes a commitment to broadcast peaceful
group
news?
Of people.
Yeah.
Peaceful
stop
news.
Sensationalism.
I think personally, I would love to kill those people. Who destroy the peace on the peace day?
But that doesn't mean that's not the meaning of
the
past.
Okay,
so
on the ninth day, is a capital offense.
How can it be a peaceful day? You are closing your eyes, that's what's going on around you.
Mm.
If you are not considering that, then how can you consider I'm okay? That
it's just for
no
the time being.
Maybe we see too much.
It's a very personal peaceful day, no?
And that is just about what you've seen the rest of the week.
Okay, for example,
just contemplating
this
that.
Load shedding that's been happening in our country for the past, I don't know, since when. This load shedding, I find a very good point in that. And there is a one piece point. Okay, when there is no light, families come in one room and they communicate.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen anywhere and anywhere else. That's the one thing that load shedding has brought. And that's been happening in house to house. I've noticed that. If in my house there's no light and if I'm alone in my room, I would go to my neighbor. So you know that interaction between neighbors, between a community, that how it all starts.
Or people go outside,
yeah.
The whole family goes outside and just sits there with a candle.
Yeah.
I think there should be freedom in everything in Pakistan. For example, they have very, very traditional thinking, right? And not like everybody should have cosmopolitan thinking. Like one day I was in the bus and I didn't know that... I seated with the girls, right, and I was beaten by them. I don't know. I was beaten by them. This thing coming, so that's why.
You sat on a public bus.
Yeah.
In the women's section.
And there's complete freedom in everything, and they have lack of cosmopolitan. So
we have to be responsible, primarily, with our behaviors to them. If you're not responsible anymore, then how would you allow or how would you, you know, restrict yourself? We are talking about the gardens, we are talking about the jogging.
No,
we are living in a country where there's just 5%. Just 5% people can speak English. We are just 1%.
Can someone just tell them?
Tell them to be
more.
Excuse me? We want to have tea?
So, we were, you know, we were living in the country where just 5% per person can speak English. 1% or hardly 1% can ride a bicycle or, you know, jogging. So, obviously, like I said in U.S., you have ever seen the person who is preaching on the road like Mullah? Never. You have to respect the majority, first of all. Whatever he's saying, right or wrong. Second, the responsible behavior for others. Whatever he is, the culture, the religion, the ethnic, whatever, the preliminary, the humanity is this and that, what you have to act like. You are just American. I can say anything to you. Why? Because some responsible actor, you know, I'm on me. David is here. Why the girls were jogging in the gardens? Why the girls were jogging in the gardens become victim of the gazing or the strain? Because the lack of responsible attitude. So, if your opponent is not responsible or being responsible on his end, you just humbly acknowledge that you are not doing this. Be responsible for what you are. It is very, very humble way to create peace. So
how do you define responsibility? Mm-hmm. For instance, if I were to jog in a park, so is that my responsibility to be modestly dressed?
No.
I mean, should I be wearing a dupatta in a jogging spree, or should I be wearing? I mean, what is
whatever you have, you are wearing.
Yeah.
You must have applying any, you know, ideological restriction or, you know, code of conduct.
Yeah, but then who gives you that? What is the...
We are, like me, we used to study with the girls who react very morally, but we never said, or they never said as you are doing wrong. We have to, you know, create a level of tolerance and all.
Yeah,
you know you are doing a weird thing. Look, this is, I said you are just 5% people in the whole country who is jogging in the garden. So, do you think it's going to go to
no? Yeah, but we're talking about...
If you want to change them, then talk to them humbly and say this. Look, if you are following the Muslim ideology or the National Pakistani ideology, is it good you are doing?
No, wait, what I'm trying... Okay, forget about us 5%. Let's talk about a big middle class.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't get enough exercise because gardens. They're not rich enough to have a plot of land where they can exercise. So they need to go to a public park. I know my driver's wife would, if she's suffering from blood pressure, she would never go and jog because it's not right, you're saying. So, but if our society was that liberal and we could have just normal people doing their normal stuff,
visions of peace. I often go to Lawrence Gardens, Bagi Jinnah.
Yeah.
And I go sometimes very early in the morning or in the evenings, and I often find single men just sitting under a tree on the grass on their own.
Yeah.
And I think how beautiful that they're taking that space for themselves. Single people just sitting in the park, taking solace and being in a different space. And I always sort of look at them and construct stories about what their lives might be like.
You can see all the women dressed up in track suits, they're jogging, I jog, I walk. Every woman of the...
There's more to park up, you're talking about a different section.
Forget about the recreation. I mean, I know this woman, she had no husband and she had to go drop her kid off to school every morning. It was quite a long distance walk. If she could ride a bike, and if it was all right in the society to have a bicycle, she could afford a bicycle, and it would have made that journey for those 10 years very easy every morning.
I think there when parents came,
in early 80s or early 70s, or in Lahore, it was used to ride a bike.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
Salima said she went to college on a bike.
In Bharti, you're talking about the Bharti. The foreigners came on cycle. I guess this is our inner fear or your adopted fear.
No, I think
who
it's
says
like,
you?
I think it's affected women in a big way. That's what I think. More than men. It's affected women. This situation in Pakistan has affected women.
But I mean, that's another kind of attack. I think that's kind of dividing, dissecting peace into the
gender.
All right. What do you think there's a cultural loading to the word peace? I mean, peace is an English word. What would its equivalent be in Urdu?
Aman.
And so if you unpack that word, does it have different resonance?
It just brings me to this really interesting point here. I know so many people who started naming their children Aman and Amal.
Yeah.
And it started happening. It's a very recent phenomenon.
Yeah.
Because we have lack of Aman and Amal.
And when you first heard that I was coming and I was going to speak about a peace project, what was your reaction? What did you think before I even said anything?
Because I found it definite, so that would be a political one. Especially the person who came from US and talk about peace. And recently we're a doctor, got 86 years. You tell me, how should I perceive about you?
Yeah.
Just tell me. There's a drone attack there that kills dozen people. Where the institution has been, hacked. We are where the capital city has been hacked. No one can check your even car. So what should I think about you? It's a very, awful condition.
That awfully connects us all together as humanity, you see, because when you're saying those things, you're generalizing every American, and that's exactly what those Americans do, generalizing every Pakistani.
Yeah. All right, but here's an interesting idea. We speak about the state here as we're not connected to it. We maybe don't believe in the politicians, maybe we don't believe in laws that are enacted, and we feel unempowered to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And practically everybody in this room lives their lives in a way where they don't really engage with it or force change. And actually, in America, is it that different?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many American citizens actually endorse American foreign policy or feel that they are empowered to change it? I don't know. I mean, I just asked this as a question.
Yeah, it's the same.
It's similar, I think.
Mm-hmm.
maybe there's less excuse in a real democracy, you know, where you're not really under threat in the same way. If you challenge it, I don't know.
I'm sorry, but when you talk about the peace, I just think, look, who's talking?
This is your natural, your expression. Why should we be sorry?
Yeah.
You must be feeling the hierarchy which is built from mediate by media or whatever.
Or maybe it's a piece of.
Because
yeah.
You are not so far with Ram. So,
and
you know, helplessness over thinking.
Thinking that you are also considering that thing. That's why you were talking
about. There would
about
be a terrorist.
that's why you were talking about hospitality. But I think it's natural.
It's very political.
Whatever you think,
yeah.
Whatever you do.
Yeah, we are being amused to watch. You know.
Life
the
is the war between
the bomb blast
and get something
time,
and losing something.
Although we are fearing about the bomb blast and, you know, no one wants to listen or watch TV due to this. But everyone wants. And see, eat details. I'm feeling that, okay, unless they don't become, you know, habitual or become amused by such horrifying images or something.
That brings me to another very interesting thing. You see, when you talk about amusement and news, so how many of you boys play video games here? Boys and the girls. Boys and the girls play video games here. And what games do you play?
Shooters.
Most wanted.
So now, look who's talking. You see, kind of irony, you talk about amusement and then you talk about violence. So I don't know if it's how we're trained or this is kind of innate, but it's connected somehow.
Indeed, we are living in 21st century and we're assuming peace of the BC's level, before the Christ level.
I think when you talk about time, you can't really make such a division when you talk about the nature of humanity. Like when you talk about peace, I'm sure it would have meant the same thing 4,000 years back. And when you talk about violence, it must have meant the same thing. You know, the gladiators
that
culture.
The level of perception also has been changed by the time to time. The level of beauty was changed in the flame.
You know where our country goes wrong? Because the step one that we take, there are religious values. Every country on the other, like on earth, their religion, their concepts are being updated with time to time. Quran, I'm not saying that it has to change, it has to get revised, like in different classes. It's just being taught in the masjid, or Wahi Maulvi, after the same Maulvi gives his same ideas. I'm just saying that there, the same Quran should be, you know,
improvised
in this class. Why not? But I think things have to be updated and have to be upgraded. Not totally mean different thing, but just to make that idea clear from a different perception, from a different person. Mm-hmm. A mediocre, a wealthy, or a poor.
But you see, that's where education is coming in, whether it's formal or religious. What I'm talking about is something which is innate, like a human nature.
Yeah.
The idea of peace. As part of the human nature, and the idea of violence as part of the human nature, I don't think it has changed over the years. The basic
underlying
underlying fact about what you want in a peaceful society or in a peaceful house must have been the same thing 4,000 years back. And that's where I would say, you know what you were just talking about before, so I'm kind of referring to that.
I just think that when the peace rules are different in America, and they're different for us. I mean, coming back to the sentencing of Dr. Afi, I mean, she might be guilty, we don't know. I mean, I'm not one to judge that. But they've judged her as, I don't think she really killed somebody, she injured American soldiers or whatever. So giving her an 86-year sentence, so those are the rules for qualifying peace in American society. Yet you drone us. So when you have a set of rules for yourself and you have a different set of rules for us, that's going to impede peace. That's going to cause conflict. So even though we think that not all Americans think that way, or not all Pakistanis are terrorists, but still that just, you know, on some level I think we all are pained by the fact that she got sentenced to 86 years when she could have had a trial in Pakistan or something else.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it takes us back to the same, the right to hospitality, mm-hmm. on some level. Which reminds me of another very interesting thing. I don't know, a couple of months back they caught an American somewhere in Sawat, and he had all those, you know, knives and guns, and then he was just sent back. He didn't get to any trial.
Yeah.
While anything even close to that happens in the United States, I don't think it would have been the same.
Yeah, I mean, how many American militants, jihadists, are in Guantanamo?
Yeah.
Or have been? Yeah. I don't know, but I imagine there's not.
So I think 2 weeks down the line, when you have that new museum, someone has to discuss that the peace rules have to be the same for everybody. You can't have double standards. You can't be droning one nation. And fine, if you think somebody was a threat to America, then I mean, I don't know. We might think somebody's a threat to Pakistan. I mean, that's what the sovereign state is all about. You guard your own interests.
What does everyone,
power.
I mean, maybe it's
yeah.
a different topic, but not really. What does everyone feel about America's stance, or the West's stance in terms of Iran's nuclear program?
Mm.
I mean, what does everyone feel about that?
Well, it was very interesting because last night Ahmadinejad was addressing the UN General Assembly and the American delegation got up and left. And, well, they do that every year, but fine, in his speech, he kind of just digresses. I think the Iranian president, he just misses the point. But then Iran has a right to civil nuclear capability. Yes, if it's going to be for conflict, then we're right next to Iran. He might just bomb us. I mean, you know.
But I mean, we're a nuclear power ourselves.
Yeah. But
you know,
what's the point of being a nuclear power?
Mm.
I mean, you're gonna, what, you have nuclear power to bomb India, when you're gonna bomb them, you're gonna die in the process.
No, I agree, but I mean, one argument about nuclear deterrence is that it is deterrent.
No, I think they should let Iran be.
Nuclear power.
It's interesting how acquiring all these weapons is making a move towards peace in the region. To safeguard and not break a war, perhaps, at some point. It's ironical.
But you know, in the first place, it's Europe who was selling the armed weapon, the nuclear technology to Iran. I think, I don't know, was it the French? Or I don't know who it was, secretly. So, it's this big, I mean, there are countless movies made on this, that it's the West who wants to sell their arms and ammunition to rogue states. It's a very big business. So
but in a way, you know, the ghastly tragedy, perhaps, that should never have happened at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it should have changed the world. It should have changed the world forever in terms of our idea about mass conflict. And I feel now, actually, nuclear weapons are more dangerous than ever because everyone's forgotten. Generations have gone by. And there hasn't been... You haven't been exposed to the horror of the use of nuclear weapons as other generations have. It's been closer to their lives. And yet it's a really ghastly phenomenon in all our lives. If you want to talk about peace, how can we be at peace when we live in a country next to another nuclear-armed country who are in conflict with each other perpetually
and
are busy building as many...
You
know, and both countries are building as many weapons as they can. They're building delivery systems. They're building early warning systems. And so what's the level of paranoia going to be in 10 years' time? I feel there's that level of peace in our lives. How can we be at peace when we live in this world that's perpetually on the brink of destruction?
I just feel that there is no peace when one person feels that he actually has the right to take someone's life. Anyone, even in judiciary. I don't believe that any human being has the right to take life of another human being. All cases. Mm. All cases.
That could no. That your conversation can just be highlighted with what happened in Sialkot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm. I mean, who gave them the right to kill someone?
Yeah.
Anyone. Just not.
You know, like in an ideally in a utopic situation, I think Brandon's Imagine would have been the perfect
solution. That's the perfect song.
And if there's no possession,
John Lennon's Imagine is the perfect song. But on a bigger level, then there should be no nuclear weapons anyway.
No war, no possession, no borders.
It's not about whether Iran should have it. They should just not be. Mm. I just think the United Nations has completely failed on all levels. Mm. Because when they went to war in Iraq, Blair and Bush, they just completely threw... I mean, that resolution... they just
didn't regard.
They didn't regard. I mean, then why they should just dissolve the body. I thought all those speeches happening in the National... in the General Assembly last night were just nothing, meaningless. So,
I said, what do people have to do by that whole idea of one world? I don't know where... in which movie... I think it's Michael Moore or something who was talking about it, or it's in Zeitgeist. That it's again like, you know, one of those conspiracies that somebody's one of these Western countries, they're trying to implant like in European Union, so they want to bring the whole world in under one umbrella.
That's Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist, right? Mm-hmm. So what about that concept? Do you think
that
might be a good idea? That would be
because if she was saying that agar Bangladeshi, all the different people come all together, so why not all the nations come together?